We're doing the book of Shmuel, and we're up to what's called the fifth chapter. And the Jewish people have united to appoint David as king. And everyone agrees. David is all of 33 years old when he was originally appointed. Now he's 40 years old when all of Israel accepts him. And we discussed how he conquered Jerusalem, that they had these machines that were run by water power that made Jerusalem inaccessible. And then Yoav, his nephew, was able to leap over the wall and stop the stream of water so that they could advance and take down the city. We discussed that the Yevusi in the city claimed they still had the pact going back to Avram Avinu, going back to Abraham and Isaac and to Yitzchak, and that Yoav proved that that's not so, that they broke the pact first. And so they conquered Jerusalem. And that's going to be David's capital. David is the one that sets up Jerusalem as the capital of the Jewish people. The Philistines hear that we've anointed David as king over Israel, and so they advance. Just as when we appointed King Saul, they attacked. Now that David is king, they won the previous war against Saul 7 years earlier. And now that David is king, they advance on David. David first goes to a fortified tower. He gets his calm. He's focused. He's clear. And then he asks Hashem, should I attack them? Will you let me win them? The Philistines have such a great army that they just spread out across the fields. And God tells David, you advance, you ascend towards them, and I will give them in your hands. And David attacks. And he breaches their forces and puts them on the run. And they're running, and they leave behind all their idols. And the pasuk says, Vayisa'im David v'anashav. And the word Vayisa'im ordinarily means they lifted them, they took their idols. And Vayisa'im could also mean they lifted the flames. To lisa could also mean to burn, to lift flames, to make burn. And so one understanding is that they burnt all the Philistine idols that they left behind when they fled from the battle. And the other understanding is they took it for themselves. So the Talmud questions, how could David take idols? Idols is something that a Jew is prohibited from deriving any benefit from. So the Talmud says that in this war, one of the Philistine soldiers was called Ittai HaGitti. He was later one of the great warriors of King David. And when he saw the Philistines losing the battle, he saw what a great warrior David was and how the Jews were going to be victorious. So he switched sides. He never did gear. He wasn't a Jew. He was a Philistine who fought in David's wars. And every time we'd capture idols of the non-Jews, so the halacha says that once an idol enters a Jew's possession, so then you can't do anything with it. You have to destroy it. But so long as it was owned by a non-Jew, a fellow non-Jew could take an idol and break off its nose or something and say, this isn't an idol, this is a piece of trash. This is a piece of gold. And once he does that, it loses its status as an idol. A Jew can't do that. A non-Jew could do that to another non-Jew's idol. And that's what Ittai HaGitti did. So then the pasuk reads beautifully. Originally, David burnt the idols. Nope. Then Ittai HaGitti... No, you can't melt it. You got to get rid of them. You're not allowed to have any benefit from it. Then Ittai HaGitti came over and joined David's forces. And then he annulled all the remaining idols. And from that moment onward, David and his men could take the idols. They could melt them. They could do whatever they want with it because they lost their status as idols. Again, the Philistines regroup and they prepare another attack in Emek Rephaim. And David asks Hashem, should I go? And Hashem says, no, you attack them from behind. And when you hear me, you hear my forces, so to speak, the angels crossing the top of the trees, the Bechaim, which are either a type of chochim, a type of thorn tree, or a type of strawberry bush, a type of strawberry tree. So then you prepare yourself to attack because that's a sign that God has advanced before you. And David does that. And here we see it was a similar test to Shaul. Remember when Shaul became king? So then he was tested where Hashem told him to wait before he attacks the Philistines, and he did not wait. And David over here too was told to wait, and although the danger was very, very close by, he obeyed. And it's interesting that Hashem gives him the sign as though his angels are on the trees. Angels go on trees. What's going on here? The idea is it's a sign. The angels are crossing over the thorns as though God is saying, I'm not having it easy, just like you're not having it easy. Hashem always shows us that He is with us in our suffering. Just as the Jewish people were suffering in Egypt, so Hashem doesn't appear in great fanfare, but Hashem appears in a small cactus that's burning. Hashem is showing a sign to Moshe. He's saying, you know, I'm with them in their suffering. I haven't ignored their suffering. And the same thing here. Hashem goes on top of the thorn bushes. Hashem gives a sign as though the angels are there to indicate to us that He's with us in our suffering. David, in this battle, had gathered a great army, and he takes the opportunity that he has tens of thousands of people united, and after the war, he takes them with him to the Aron. He wants to bring the Aron up to Jerusalem. Now, David had once said a song, and he said, "The Torah is like my songs." He said, "Zemirot ayuli chukecha bevet megurai." When I walk around the house, God, I sing your Torah like a song. And because he's such a tzaddik, so Hashem takes him on a hare's width. And Hashem says, you think Torah is so simple? It's a song to you. I will show you that you will err on something that even children know. And here David did that. He erred on a very basic point. The Torah says that the Aron is supposed to be carried on the shoulders of the Levites. Now we have to realize that there was so much gold on the Aron that it was humanly impossible to carry that much gold. I mean, the Aron weighed so much it was impossible that four Levites would carry the Aron. We have a tradition that the Levites would assume the position, put their shoulders under the poles, stand up, and the Aron would levitate above their shoulders. They thought they were carrying it. It looked like they were carrying it, but really they weren't carrying it. We use the term ha'aron nose et nosav. The Aron was carrying its carriers. And we see this because the verse describes in the book of Yoshua and Joshua that when we came to the Jordan, the Kohanim set foot in the Jordan split, then all of Israel passed the Jordan. The Kohanim had just entered, right? They had just set foot in the Jordan. And then after all of Israel crossed over the Jordan, the Kohanim took steps back and the Jordan continued flowing. So wait a second, the Kohanim haven't yet entered Israel. The Aron is standing outside. All of Israel entered and the Aron is standing outside. And it never says how they got across. So we have a tradition that the Aron HaKodesh levitated, carried them across and put them down on the other side. Because we think we're carrying the Torah. Really, the Torah is carrying us. Which is a deep insight. It's a, you know, we say it in simplistic form. So the same thing over here. The Levites should have carried the Aron up to Jerusalem. But David erred, and he put it on top of a wagon, and they started carrying it from that pious Jew Avinadav, who had housed the Aron during all this time since the Philistines returned it in his domain, in his plot. And he sends his two sons, Uzzah, who leads the chariots, and Achio, his other son, who's on the side. And Achio is there to balance the chariot. When you're carrying a load on a chariot, so usually such a heavy load, like the Aron, you have one guy leading the horses, and one guy who's holding onto the wagon to keep it balanced. So that's exactly what they're doing. Only at one moment, the horses lurch forward, and Achio was leading the way, and Uzzah was the one behind. And when the horses lurch forward, so Uzzah grabs the handle of the Aron to hold it from falling off, and he drops dead. He made an error. You're supporting God. You got to grab the handle so God doesn't fall off the chariot. So it's like, you know, if you're driving in the car and suddenly you hit the brakes and you stick your hand out to grab the guy next to you. So if it's God's Aron that's there and you stick your hand out to grab it, so with regard to God, it's considered disrespectful. And David takes personal responsibility. David is very shaken and he says, how could I bring the Aron to my domain? If Uzzah dropped dead, well, who knows if I could live up to this responsibility. And so David brings the Aron at a stop, at a local stop, by Oved Edom Hagiti, who was really a Levite, and the Aron remains there. And when the Aron remains there, this man who couldn't have children, well, he could have children, but he had a unique amount of children. He had 8 sons and 8 daughters-in-law. Now, he couldn't have been too young, right? So his wife and his 8 daughters-in-law got pregnant when the Aron was there, and they each had 6 children. What's that, quintuplets? I don't know the number, hextuplets, whatever. They had 6 tuplets. Very good. They each had 6 children at a shot. So when David heard that, he heard that God is giving a sign. He's blessing the home of Oved Edom. And so he decides that he will, now he can bring the Aron back up to Jerusalem. And that's where we're going to pick up with the procession of how they brought the Aron up to Jerusalem after this sign that happened by Oved Edom.